Working on the Lathe, 1979. In January of 1980, the stations of the Public Broadcasting Service first showed the film based on my novel, The Lathe of Heaven. The magazine Horizon asked me for a piece to accompany the release, and so I wrote this fragmentary memoir of my first involvement in filmmaking. To answer a question I am often asked, no, I didn't write the script. I worked on it, though, and learned a good deal about scripting and about filmmaking as creative consultant, with far more real consulting and creative power than usual in that position. The other question is usually, do you like the movie? And I say, well, we sure could have used another $250,000, but I think we turned a shoestring into a pretty good silk purse. Since the tight budget forced us to shoot in a few weeks, without retakes, in Dallas, not Portland, we couldn't get the close, gritty, local texture of life I longed for. And though Ed Emshwiller's War in Space, using, I believe, frisbees for flying saucers, is a delight, our alien is a disaster. Stiff and mechanical, instead of beautiful and strange and sea turtlish. But not only is the film faithful to the sense of the book, the acting, the directing, the camera work, the music, all of very high quality, integrate and work together to make a strong, vivid film, quite independent of the book. Yes, I like it. Portland. Hello, said this voice. I'm David Loxton of the TV lab at WNET, and I want to come talk to you about making a TV film of one of your novels.
No, you don't, I said, terrified.
Well, actually I do, said the voice, in a mild, astonished tone. I could not say that the only thing I dread more than phone calls from strangers is visits from strangers, because that's not the sort of thing you can say to strangers.
I'm sorry I have this English sort of accent, said the voice. It's because I'm English, but I live in New York. Would it be all right if I came on Wednesday?
He said it Wednesday. There was no doubt he was English.
You can't come all the way to Oregon, I said desperately. But it was no use. He came. He conquered. We made a TV movie out of one of my novels.
David wanted me to choose which novel. I picked The Lathe of Heaven because it's the only one of my books that I ever enjoyed imagining as a film. When I began imagining it as a TV film, I enjoyed it still more, and very soon had dropped my novelist's suspicions and skittishness and was taking the project seriously. Because, as I listened to David, I began to understand the possibilities. In television, there's no need for the spectacular. In fact, the medium rather leads away from it, inward. In science fiction terms, from outer to inner space. And The Lathe of Heaven is about dreams and dreaming. What Dr. Haber, the dream specialist in the novel, calls the all-night show on Channel One. There's a good deal in common between the mind's eye and the TV screen, and though the TV set has all too often been the boob tube, it could be, it can be, the box of dreams. Then also, Lathe had the virtue, given a public broadcasting service budget, of being set on Earth in the very near future, and having a small and almost entirely human cast. There was really only one alien being to worry about, and it could wear a spacesuit or shell, which would help. But what about melting Portland?
No trouble, David said grandly. We can quite easily melt Portland, especially if we film that bit in Dallas.
David Loxton is a large man with large dreams. New York. First read-through with the actors. Thursday morning, we all meet in the ballroom of a truly weird hotel on West End Avenue
with plastic azaleas and ancient ladies, also partly plastic, I believe, and you have to get the key to the toilet from the caterer, who looks like a native of some perhaps ammonia atmosphere planet. The ballroom is hung with dusty chandeliers, all smearily ablaze, and set about at intervals with tisical chairs and a white piano with a hernia. Here we will rehearse, because the director can mark out the floor with tape to the size of the shooting area of each scene, and move chairs about to represent sets and so on. I don't suppose anything he did would matter much to the management of this hotel. Enter our Heather, Margaret Avery, incredibly elegant, quiet, fierce, fragile. Enter our George, Bruce Davison, blue jeans and thick fair hair and clear, complicated eyes. Enter our Dr. Haber, Kevin Conway, red Irishman, erect, intense, intelligent, formidable. Enter into the increasingly complex mixture of personalities, Fred Barzyk, the director, who always seems such a calm, quiet fellow. One must see the beast in its native habitat. Rehearsals. Fred's copy of the script is the thickness of the Manhattan phone book. It's interleaved, many extra pages for each page of script, sketches of the set or location, where the camera can be or must be, what kind of light at what time of day, what's outside the windows, what movements are possible, endless information. And all this he, with the most self-effacing, easygoing courtesy, tells the actors as they begin to walk through the scene. And he moves around and among them, with his hands up before his face forming a square. The camera eye, to which they play. It sounds awkward, but it's lovely to watch. It is choreography at the moment of creation. What I see is that the stage, fixed and oriented in one direction, audience word, becomes infinite. The orientation can be to any side, at any height, any distance, and so the actor's dance is, by so much, more complex and subtle. In this enlargement of possibility, this openness, film is surely more of our time than regular theater, and theater in the round is a sorry compromise to my taste. I had to see how it's done before I could realize that. I wonder if when I watch the actual filming, I will still be able to see what's really going on. Probably I'll be confused by mere machinery, the cameras and lights and booms and so on. But here, I did see how it's done. And it's beautiful. Dallas, the man with the boom. We got here on Tuesday at 4 p.m. They were taking the alien apart. They had just finished that day's shooting, which had begun at 1 a.m. That was an uncommonly long day. They'd been shooting in the Hyatt Hotel and had done as much as possible in the dead of night so as not to disturb the hotel's routine, especially since this was the scene where everybody is gray. But all their days are 12 hours at least, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., 6 days a week. A domestic touch? In the hall, there's a huge coffee urn, a carton of apples and bananas, and various great boxes of donuts and cookies and other innocent victuals, and the crew people, most of whom are pretty young, eat like the orangs and the elephants in the zoo. They just sort of vacuum clean their way through 20 dozen donuts. Shloop. Gone. The damned augmenter. We're shooting with one camera, which is, I am told, the classy way, but also the hard way. It means essentially that each scene, each take, is shot first as wide as possible, the whole scene, and then up close. If it's a dialogue, in the close take, the camera stays on George throughout the scene. Then it goes around to the other side and takes Haber throughout the same scene. and each of these angles is usually shot twice, and possibly 5 or 6 times if anything goes wrong. And there are a lot of things that can go wrong. Especially the augmenter, Dr. Haber's dream machine. I truly wish Dr. Haber and I had never invented the damn thing. The different takes will be spliced when the film is edited. A bit from this take and a bit from that. George's face while he talks, and Haber's while he answers, and then a cut to the augmenter showing George's brain scan. And so each take has to be like all the other takes in every detail. So that while George is saying a certain line of dialogue, the exact same bit of electronic jiggery-pokery has to be running on the various readout screens of the augmenter every time he says that line, in each retake of the scene. All the same, that was simple compared to the mashed potatoes. The mashed potatoes, or the glamorous life of the film star. Hey, baby, you want to be in the movies? Imagine yourself sitting in a crowded cafeteria in Dallas, Texas. You are wearing kind of funny clothes and transparent plastic shoes that don't fit, but so is everybody else. 2 people jammed against your back at the next table are muttering, "What is the name of this year movie? The Way to Heaven?" "No, it's Lake of Heaven, but I sure as hell can't figure what it's about." To your right is your 15-year-old son. Across from him, your husband. Next to your husband is his 80-year-old Aunt Ruby, who lives in Dallas and decided to come help us shoot the movie. Husband looks like Lemmy outta here, but Ruby is as merry as a grig. At the end of the table is a beautiful black woman deep in conversation with a fair-haired man. In front of each of them, in front of everybody in the whole cafeteria, is a tray, and everybody's tray is exactly the same. On it is a pile of old, cold mashed potatoes, a pile of old, cold boiled carrots, and a cup of something that once might have been tea. Now, imagine you are a movie star. Well, anyhow, an extra. And you are eating your old cold mashed potatoes and talking and smiling while you do so. Okay, you can do that, sure. It's easy to be an actor. Yes, but that was take 1. Now we have to do take 2. And if you ate some mashed potatoes in take 1, you have to eat some mashed potatoes in take 2, don't you? Because the action has to be the same so they can splice shots. So a sadist comes and puts a nice new pile of old mashed potatoes on your tray. And then there's take 3, and take 4, and take 10. Actually, we extras were only in a few shots, and only got slightly sick, and Ruby insisted she liked the carrots. Margaret was clever and only toyed with her food. But Bruce sat there for 3 mortal hours, re-eating stale mashed potatoes and laughing. If the life of the film stars is glamorous, believe me, they earn it. I sure hope they don't cut Aunt Ruby. The music of this work. The filming took a few weeks, the editing, months. At last, the edited film went in cassette form to the composer. And a couple of months after that, we find the composer, Michael Small, standing, pipe in mouth, behind a drafting table, amidst a storm-tossed sea of score, conducting. Some 30 musicians sit among trains, trails, endless entrails of electric cord. Shadows of microphone booms stand angular and elegant on the fibrous walls of the recording studio. On a small TV set facing Michael, a scene of the film runs in silence, subtitle numbers ticking off hour, minute, second, frame. Crescendo, a subtle theme I have learned to listen for, emerges, changes, returns, and fades. "Okay," says Michael, "could you violin sound a little more otherworldly in bar 15? No sweat, says an altogether this-worldly violin. Hey, says the trumpet to the synthesizer snidely. You still plugged in over there? Ian, the synthesizer, knowing that he's the one who's really going to melt Portland, smiles, serene. Seymour, says Michael to the cello, whose part has one of those eerie, tweedling passages strings can do. How long can you go on playing those 16th notes? Till Tuesday, if you want me to, says the cello. I believe him. Rosin! A strangled cry from the percussion enclosure, also known as the jungle, where the percussionist is bowing temple bells. That last note you have, Michael says to the oboe, that was beautiful. Could you hold it a while? A while, the oboe says modestly. I believe him. Okay, let's make it, says Michael, raising his baton. Guinness Book of Records, please note. The longest sustained note ever held by a human oboist was played at the National Recording Studio on West 47th Street on September 13th, 1979, by Henry Schumann during the taping of The Lathe of Heaven score. These guys can do anything. And the music is beautiful. The raw-boned beast of a movie we have worked on so long is transformed, transfigured by the music. The music for this scene, this moment, the music of this work. It comes together now, at last. All the months, all the money, all the machinery, all the many people. It comes together. We have made it.